a magic read-along. That level of enthusiasm was completely wrong for what we're talking about today, which is that shit's gone from bad to worse in the Shades of Magic series. We are in week 8, Conjuring of Light. This is exciting for me because this is the last of the videos that were lost. After this, you will see me return to my gorgeous setup and my high resolution quality and my better hair and makeup. I don't know, who knows? That one's about a bit of a crapshoot. But in Edinburgh, it will look like I stepped back in time, because I did. But today we are talking about the second chunk, which is from parts 4 through part 7. So part 4 to part 8. We have so much to talk about. So we should just get in. We left our characters. Rai is at least alive. Alucard went to go find his family, and Anissa is in a bad way, his little sister. He left Barriss in the remains of his old house with it like crumbling down on him. And Lila was drugged. That's not going to go well for anyone because she just really needed some rest. And now here we are. Where are we going to open? We are going to open part 4. Weapons at Hand, Chapter 1. We are actually in White London with a child named Nasi. Nasi actually comes back in Threads of Power, just so you know. I really like this kid. She's like 10. She is sitting with Oshka's body. Remember that at the beginning of Conjuring of Light, Lila Bard went to go save Kel, found herself fighting Oshka, and slit Oshka's throat. I mean, Oshka did drive a knife into her glass eye first, but yes. So Oshka is dead. And Nasi is sitting with her and thinking about the fact that she really liked her and she doesn't want her to be lonely in death. And so this sweet little child is sitting with her. Meanwhile, we cut to Holland, who is in prison. Holland just really can't catch a break in this series. Remember, he was being held captive in his own body by Oseron. Oseron left his body. The king and the like royal guard took Holland, threw him in prison. He is in prison and he's having a really hard time of it because sitting there alone in the dark, his mind is going back to his past. And we are going to get the first of a series of flashbacks about all the times that somebody tried to kill Holland and how it shaped him. This first flashback, particularly brutal. He was 9 years old and it's his brother. His brother essentially tries to carve the magic out of him and he turns his brother, his older brother, to stone to protect himself. We cut back to the present in the cell and soldiers come in and proceed to beat the shit out of Holland and try to kill him as a gift from Lila Bard using one of Lila's knives. Kel gets there just in time and banishes the prisoners and essentially chastises Holland for letting this happen to him, because truly the thing is that like a prison cannot stop an Antari from escaping if an Antari wanted to escape. Holland is holding himself there. And Kel basically is like, at what point are you going to stand up and fight for yourself instead of for the bad guys? Kel's kind of on his high horse and he's going to have to come down off that horse, which he's going to. Kel goes and joins King Maxim in the map room, and the king is there meeting with members of his council trying to track the spread of this pollution, this plague through the city, this corruption. We kind of learned that there are two kinds of victims, those who fall to it, who are consumed, and like kind of die fighting it, as Anissa is currently doing, and those who don't resist it and become puppets for Oseron. These are the only two kinds that we have found at this point. There's going to be a third outcome. But right now, Kel has an idea. But before he can share it with the group, Rai arrives. And everyone's like, Rai, we heard all of these terrible things had happened to you. And Rai is like, as you can see, I am totally fine. How rumor spreads when you're indisposed. Kel then tells the room his plan to put a spell over London. Essentially, Oseron needs bodies. He needs soldiers. He needs puppets. So they need to find a way to take the people of London off the board so that Oseron can't consume their life force and use them to his end. Oseron is not a god. He is an animated piece of magic with an ego. He can be conquered. And meanwhile, Tyrion, who's there, the head priest, is like, okay, we can do this. The priests can create a spell like this, but we're going to need things from the sanctuary, which is where the priests all live. At this point, Lila Bard arrives, very much conscious, and is like, that's great, because I could use some fresh air. Lila is so mad. Lila is like, which bitch did this to me? Like, who drugged me? She doesn't blame Hastra because she knows he was working for somebody else, but she does make it very clear to Hastra, next time you drug me, I'm gonna tack you to a wall. So don't do that. Kel also tells Lila, please stop trying to kill Holland. We might need him. Lila's like, no promises. Lila offers to go to the sanctuary for the supplies for the citywide enchantment. Meanwhile, Alucard. This one's gonna hurt, okay? Alucard racing with his sister toward his ship. He gets there. He's looking for help. He's looking for anything. There's no crew. Anissa is burning up from the inside out. Alucard is trying to protect her. She descends into unconsciousness. He can see the threads of her life and her magic starting to dim. And then he starts to feel a little unwell. And what he realizes is that in the course of fighting Barriss and saving Anissa from the house, Lila's protective mark has rubbed away. And Oceron has gotten in to Alucard and starts to talk to him from the inside to let him in, let me in, let me in. This is Oceron's refrain to everyone who hasn't fallen victim to him yet. And Alucard starts to hallucinate as Oceron's magic tries to force its way into his mind. Not good. It's not good. King Maxim, meanwhile, back in the palace, refuses to hide and watch his city fall, and he wants to go out there. He wants to do something. He needs a plan, and we see him go to his private chambers, and we get the first mention that before he was the king, he was a figure called the Steel Prince, this mythic figure. We're going to come back to him for that. Note that I wrote everything in this book about the Steel Prince before I ever had an idea to write a comic book about it, and so I had to do a lot of retroactive planning when it came time to write the comic book to include all of the little notes about the Steel Prince that he references in here. Like the relics on his wall is a half-burned banner and a pair of swords, a gleaming helm of burnished metal, a stone arrowhead Isra had freed from his side, like all of these little things, which I then had to go back and put in the comics later. But anyway, Maxim is trying to come up with a plan. Rai, meanwhile, is standing at the windows, marveling at the difference of hours, because just before, you know, this time, the day before, he was admiring the tournament proceedings. He was admiring the stadiums that he had built on the water, and now the city is in ruin around him. Kel arrives, and they talk about this plan that he's concocting, and they also notice that, like, Rai is concerned because he can't find Alucard. He hasn't seen Alucard anywhere. A fight breaks out in the hall between members of the tournament who have been sheltering now in the palace. So it's from the winner's ball that was overhead and are now sheltering the palace. A fight breaks out. Kel has to go subdue that, and Rai leaves the palace to go look for Alucard. And we discover, or he discovers, that he is immune to this fog, to this evil, to Oceron, because his life isn't his own. So he actually has found a strength, right? Everyone is falling victim to this plague, and it's not touching him. He goes to Alucard's ship. He finds him essentially lying on the ground, succumbing to this plague, succumbing to the sickness, burning alive from the inside out. And Rai can do nothing but anchor him. He just, like, Alucard is pleading for him not to leave. He doesn't want to die alone. And so Rai lies down on the floor beside him and holds his hand. Meanwhile, Kel subdues this minor uprising that's happened between the tournament survivors. Hastra comes to him and says, I can't find Rai. I don't know where Rai is. Kel remembers Rai looking for Alucard. He's like, God damn it. He makes a door to Rai. It ends up on Alucard's ship. He finds Rai and Alucard on the ground. But Alucard is alive. Alucard has come through this fever, this thing that has killed so many people, and he has survived it. We discover there is a third outcome. You can either die fighting Oceron's magic, you can succumb to Oceron's magic, or you can come through it, in which case you are marked by these silvering of your veins, as if all of your blood tried to boil inside your body. Alucard has these markings on him, but he is alive. Unfortunately, Anissa isn't. The little sister has fallen to Oceron's magic and now rises as his puppet. And Rai and Kel have to essentially drag Alucard away from the ship and from his dead sister and back into the safety of the palace. This is where they realize that Rai is immune and Alucard is immune. And they take this knowledge to the king. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. Meanwhile, Lila is at the sanctuary collecting supplies. Someone is banging on the door, and she's like, fuck me. This is going to draw the attention of all these, like, zombie magic plague victims. And so she opens the door, and who stumbles in? Lennos. Lennos is her second mate on the ship. He is the one that has just, like, found a way to, like, skirt through this situation. Turns out that his grandmother was an Antari, and he wears a pendant of Antari blood from his grandmother, like, and so it's been keeping him safe. They get their supplies, they're about to leave, and Lila sees Asa, the cat. This is Alucard's cat. Lila fucking hates cats. She hates this cat in particular, but she's like, I can't leave the cat. She goes after the cat. She follows the cat out into the courtyard at the sanctuary, and she gets jumped by numerous puppets of Oseron's army, including a really creepy little child girl. It's always got to have a creepy child in a book. It's just like a little check mark. Anyway, she's like, I do not have time. They are speaking to her kind of as Oseron. They're talking about, like, the king is very mad at you. Like, the king will make you kneel. The king will make you beg. We're like, this is creepy and kinky at the same time. Anyway, she fights them back, returns to Lennos, who's just holding the cat. He's like, the cat came right to me. She's like, fucking hate this cat. Let's go back to the palace now that we have our supplies. And that brings us to part 5, Ash and Atonement. Sounds ominous. We have Kel and Alucard and Rai meeting with the king and Tirin being like, we have made some discoveries. We have this immunity. We understand how it works. Lila and Lennos arrive with the supplies. It looks like shit is coming together, right? We just need a few more pieces of this plan. It's about to fall into place because a guard arrives and says that Holland wants to speak to Kel, and he will only speak to Kel. Meanwhile, Rai insists on riding out into the city now that he knows he's immune to the magic. He wants to ride out into the city and look for survivors and show people that the palace is with them. And so Lila agrees to go with him, but they promptly split up because there's a lot of ground to cover and there's a lot to do. So Rai rides out looking for survivors and doing his best to be like this prince figure for the people. And Lila rides for the night market. And she gets there and she finds a man basically yelling at ghosts, being like, come after me. He is silver scarred. So he has obviously come through the fever and he's still like, I'm going to fight you, you stupid like god. Anyway, and she like essentially is like, hey, dead people can't help anyone. So why don't you help me and like stay alive and do some good? She goes to Kala's tent. Remember, Kala is the wonderful woman who first gave her mask and her coat, who has been shipping Kel and Lila throughout this entire series, and Kala is dead. And this moment breaks Lila because, like, Lila tells us this is why she doesn't care about people, because she says, I'm going to read it to you. Lila's throat closed. This is why I run. Because caring was a thing with claws. It sank them in and didn't let go. Caring hurt more than a knife to the leg, more than a few broken ribs, more than anything that bled or broke and healed again. Caring didn't break you clean. It was a bone that didn't set, a cut that wouldn't close. It was better not to care. Lila tried not to care, but sometimes people got in. And she is mad about this and she is grieving and she essentially drags herself back together because there is so much to be done. Meanwhile, Kel goes to Holland's cell and they have a conversation about the number of people that Holland's killed, because essentially Kel was way up on his high horse, remember? And Kel and Holland now essentially snaps back with the exact number of people that he killed. First, the number of people he killed before he was under the Dane twins' control, then the number of people he killed when he was under the Dane twins' control, and then the number of people he's killed since, which is 0. We find out that he killed 3 before the Dane twins' control. This is deeply, deeply important because we have seen him kill his brother only so far. And so in those flashbacks, we are counting the dead as well. He also tells Kel that he wants an execution. He doesn't want a trial. He wants to be executed. We're like, seems a bit extreme, but Holland in the next chapter explains why. He wants a public execution because Oseron needs a body. And Holland's idea is that he will invite Oseron back into him and then Kel can kill him. So Holland's like, I will be the vessel. I will hold Oseron inside me and I will let you destroy me. Except he doesn't want Kel to kill him. He wants Kel to use a very specific spell called Aztosil. Aztosil is a confinement spell. Essentially, Holland doesn't want to take any chances of Oseron being able to like free him. If Holland dies, if he just kills him, will Osarn be able to escape? He's like, I want to use a confinement spell. Kel is horrified by the spell. We will find out why. But Kel agrees that he will do it. With this, we cut to a second flashback, and we learn about the second time that somebody tried to kill Holland, and it was his girlfriend. So we have an older brother. Now he's 18, and it's the woman that he loves, and essentially she was paid to do it. Everyone is always trying to kill Holland, and it's like, no wonder he's a broken, sad boy, because everyone, and so he has to kill his love. He had to kill his brother. Now he has to kill his lover. It just gets worse. Kel, meanwhile, goes and tells the king Holland's plan, and we learn that as Tosol, this confinement spell is essentially the cruelest thing that you can do to another person. He did it as a child to a bird, just out of curiosity, and is essentially extremely reprimanded by Tyrion because you essentially put someone in a living death. They are fully aware of themselves and they are bound. And it's like it's an unkindness. But the king agrees to the plan and says that one way or another, Kel will be the one to end Holland's life that day. We have Rai, who is out in the kingdom, in the city. He's searching for survivors, and he meets the female captain, Josta, that we met in A Gathering of Shadows, that Lila was like, hey. Josta is going to be very important. Josta is also silver scarred, meaning she has come through the fever, she has come through the fog, and survived. Alucard, Lila, and Rai are drinking their trauma. That's exactly what I wrote. They are drinking away their trauma. And Kel joins them and tells them about Holland's plan for an execution. We have Emira walking the palace, unable to sleep, and she meets with the Pharaohan emissary, who essentially is like, let Pharaoh, which is another empire, let us help. Like, you can't do this alone, and if this sickness spills outside of Arnes, outside of the borders of your empire, it's going to hurt ours. You should let us help. This is going to be important. This is going to come back. She finds Maxim in their rooms and he's sleeping, but he's left a note for Rai unfinished that seems kind of ominous. And it's about it says, know that a father lives for his son, but a king lives for his people. And we're like, oh dear, Maxim, like, what are you planning to do? He obviously is planning something. Meanwhile, Osarn, he's free, right? He's taking over this kingdom, and yet he is still hungry. He is insatiable. This is what we've learned, right? He wants more. It will never be enough. With that, we go to part 6, execution. Not an ominous sounding title at all. We have Osarn's magic beginning to seep into Grey London in the opening chapter. So we have poor Ned Tuttle, who I only was planning to write for one scene, and yet here he is in every single book, and he's in Threads of Power too. We have him waking with a very bad feeling, and essentially remember that the stone's throw where he lives and this tavern that he owns is a fixed point in the world, meaning it's a weak point between the worlds. Sure enough, he goes downstairs. He's got bad vibes happening all around his tavern, and someone is knocking at the door asking to be let in. And when he opens the door, there's nobody there. Like, it is the darkness is starting to seep. Osarn's magic is seeping through, and he's like, I don't like this at all. And he locks the door, and he's like, we're going to have to sage this place somehow. Meanwhile, Lila Bard confronts Holland down in the prison, and he tells her that he has learned from experience that it doesn't serve to dwell on what you lost. She's obviously still holding him accountable for Baron's death, but he's like, look, revenge doesn't carry you. Trust me, I know. Meanwhile, the guards come for Holland, and they go to the execution, and Kel promises that if Osarn doesn't take this bait, if he doesn't come back for Holland, that Kel will make the death as quick as possible. Osarn tells him, so he's like, oh wait, sorry, let me back up. Okay, so Kel says that if Osarn doesn't take the bait, Kel will make Holland's death as quick as possible. Holland is essentially on this platform, about to be murdered, and he calls on Osarn, like, help me. Osarn does not answer, and we're like, oh shit, he's gonna leave you hanging, literally. And at the last moment, like, Osarn comes into Holland's mind and essentially tells him to beg. He wants him to beg for his help. He just really wants to bring Holland to his knees. Holland begs because he needs Osarn to come into his body, and essentially Osarn refuses. Osarn approaches him in another stolen vessel, this time Jannar's, who was another one of the tournament entrants, and essentially says, like, go ahead and beg. And Holland's like, you need me. Like, you can't be a king without an Antari body. you need me. And Oseron's like, you're right, but I would rather watch you fall. And he then pushes Holland. Holland, who is bound in chains, pushes Holland into the river below, where Holland begins to drown. And we're like, dun, dun, dun. Oh, no. Okay. Kel sees this happen. Because he's Kel, he dives in after Holland. He's like, this isn't the way it's supposed to go. I have to save Holland. And he gets down there. Holland is like on the bottom of the river, held down by his chains. He undoes Holland's chains. Holland begins to swim up toward the surface. Kel begins to swim up after him, and he can't. He is being held by magic to the bottom of the river. Who is holding him there? Oseron. Oseron didn't want Holland. Oseron wants Kel. Oseron's like, you're going to let me in one way or another, or you're going to drown on the bottom of this river. And we're like, fuck. Lila's standing up there. Lila sees Holland go in. And then she sees that motherfucker Kel go in. And she's like, you have got to be kidding me. Sure enough, right next to her, the prince, Rai, starts choking because he can't breathe because he's drowning too. She's like, these absolute assholes. So Lila dives in. She sees Holland down there. She's like, the fuck? All this is happening underwater now. And then she sees Kel trapped to the bottom. Holland and Lila work together to free Kel and themselves. They get back up out of the water. And Rai walks up to Kel and punches him in the face. And it's like, I made peace with death. I did not make peace with dying for that asshole over there. What were you thinking? It's fair. Meanwhile, Oseron, seething. He has been deprived of what he wants, but also Holland said to him, gods don't need bodies, but kings do. And he's like, I'm going to show you. I don't need a body. I don't need any of you. But what I do need, what I want, is a palace. Because all kings have palaces. And he sees that red London palace, and he decides, I'm going to make my own damn palace. Like cranky, all my gods are like cranky children. Out like Luke in Addie LaRue, cranky child. Oseron, cranky child. He's like, I'm gonna make a palace. And he takes the stadiums from the tournament and he starts dragging them together with magic to build his own special palace on the river. And he's like, ha, now I have a palace. Meanwhile, we have a debrief between Kel and Lila and Ryan Alucard where Kel explains that this was a plan with the execution, that it was going to be a certain way to trap Oseron, and that the reason that he saved Holland was because, like, what if Oseron took his body while he was down there? Like, Holland is only good to them as a way to capture Oseron. Basically, they failed plan fail. We're going to need another plan. We need to put the city to sleep. This is essentially what's going to happen. But unfortunately, it's going to take time to build this spell that's going to go over the city. Tyrion, the priest, offers another option for containing Oseron. It is called an inheritor. This is a device that was outlawed because it was abused. Essentially, it was a way for people to pass on their magic to their heir. So you would use it when you were near death, you would put your magic into it, and then your heir would be able to draw that magic into themselves. It was so abused so fast because it didn't need consent to take somebody's magic that they were outlawed, they were destroyed. They don't exist anymore, except Alucard has seen one. And we're like, how? Tell us. Tell us everything. Alucard sold one. He came into possession of one at some point in his time as a pirate, and he sold it to a woman named Maris Patrol, who's the head of a black market. He didn't know what it did, and he just needed to be rid of it. So anyway, the problem is they need to find this black market, but it moves around. And in order to find this very special black market, they need a special kind of map, what's called a cipher's map. But the cipher's map looks like it's empty. Like if you didn't have the right spell, it would just look like a blank map. Now, Lila Bard once owned, in Great London, a map to anywhere. That's what she called it. It was a blank map. Unfortunately, she left it there. This is where we learn that Kel went back. Kel went back to Great London after Baron's death, and he took a few things from Lila's room that he thought she might want, and he's been holding on to it. So he goes and gets the map. He saved it. And then Alucard starts putting together the spell to unlock this map. Things are coming together again. We have an oscillation. Things come together, they fall apart. They come together, they fall apart. Okay, Alucard is working on breaking the cipher map, and Lila looks out the window and is like, is there another palace on the river? This is Oseron's palace that he has constructed out of the stadiums. It is sitting there in all of its weird, dark, amalgamated glory. Meanwhile, Alucard locates the market. The problem is it is in the middle of the sea. And we're like, okay, we're gonna need a ship. Now, Alucard and Kel start sniping each other. Alucard goes too far. Kel actually slaps him. This is a very big offense. You'll have to read the scene to understand that. But we need a ship. And Lennos brings in Josta. And Josta was that other captain. And the thing that's good about Josta, who's now being sheltered in the palace with all the other, like, survivors that they found, is that Josta did not dock her ship in London. All the other ships are trapped because they're in the Black River and they're being held kind of by Oseron's magic and his control. But Josta's ship has been docked outside of London. So if they can get to Josta's ship, they can use it to sail to the Forbidden Market and get this object that's going to help them trap Oseron. So much to do. Okay. Kel and Rai have a parting conversation because Rai's got to stay there. And it's decided that the people that will go to get the Inheritor are Kel, Lila, Alucard — putting Kel and Alucard together on a ship is a terrible idea — Lennos, and Josta, the captain, okay? So Kel and Rai are saying goodbye. Rai is like, I really just wanted us to go on a trip together. And Kel is like, one day we will. I will come back. We will go together. But right now we've got some bigger issues. Alucard comes in. He wants to talk to Rai alone. And he wants to explain why he left Rai those 3 years ago. And Rai essentially stops him and is like, you tell me when this is all over and you can tell me in front of everybody. Like, I am not in this for private conversations anymore, for like secret love affairs. Like, if you want to love me, you will love me publicly. And if you want to apologize to me, you apologize to me publicly after we have saved the world. So hold it. And that brings us to part 7, setting sail. Whew. Shit's about to get weird. So we have a moment between the Queen and Kel where she makes it clear that she has been a shit mom to him, but that she has always seen him as family and that she wants him to come back safely and that the palace will always be his home. Kel then heads down to the prison where they're keeping Holland, and on the way there, Tyrion joins him and asks if he knows what he's doing. And we learn that Kel is hopefully seeing this trip. If it doesn't work to get the Inheritor, hopefully it will lure Oseron out of the city. By taking the Antari out of the city, hopefully Oseron will follow them. And that is why he's heading down to the prison. So we cut down to Lila. We learn that she hates horses. This is not a surprise. She doesn't want to have to ride a horse. They're going to have to ride a horse to get to Josta's ship. The whole group is gathering there to ride to Josta's ship. And Kel arrives with fucking Holland, bound in chains. And Lila's like, what is your deal with this dude? Like, you can't leave this dude alone? Like, let him die. And this is where we learn that Kel's like, if we take all three Antari out of the city, maybe he'll go with us. Like, maybe Oseron will follow us instead. He's too great a weapon. We can't leave him behind. We'll chain him up in the bottom of the ship. Nothing will go wrong, okay? Lila rides with Kel, and she tells herself she's not going to die this way, on this horse, with Holland and company. Meanwhile, Oseron is in his palace that he built, that he made, and he's still not happy. He's still not happy. He's like, it's just not doing it for me. He feels the Antari flee. All of his little soldiers in his head, all of his little servants and puppets are like, they're getting away. And he's like, I'm not following them. That's a trap. I don't need those Antari. I am going to rule this city my own way. And sure enough, he calls on one of his servants, one of his new servants. And who arrives? Barriss Emery, Alucard's older brother, at his service, in his thrall. It's not going to end well for anyone. So the team that is going to fetch the Inheritor reaches the port, and Hastra joins them. Hastra, who just really wants to serve Kel. He's like, I have been told to serve you and protect you, and I have to go where you go, so you have to let me come with you. He gives this whole speech, and Kel's like, yeah, whatever, fine. You can come with us. We have a lot to do. Josta announces she's coming too. We meet her crew. We get a joke about three Antari getting on a boat. And with that, they are off to find the Inheritor. Meanwhile, as soon as they're gone, Rai rides out into the city. He's looking for survivors. He stays with them. He's really starting to emerge as an incredible prince. He is rising to this challenge. He is really, really, we're starting to glimpse who he could be as a king. Meanwhile, Maxim and Tyrion have a conversation about letting Kel leave, and we learn that Maxim is planning something of his own to fight Oseron, and that it involves magic. Rai returns to the palace from helping the city. He's exhausted. He goes to the baths, and Cora is there. Cora is just trying to flirt with everyone, right? She tries to seduce Rai. Rai is like, I am deeply uninterested in that right now. And Cora's like, okay, fine, I'll just keep you company. And she kind of distracts him for a little while, and he could really use distracting, so it's fine. But at some point, the mood turns weird. Like, she does something that kind of puts up a red flag for him. And so he leaves. So he goes to his room. Rai goes to his room, and he kind of thinks about how he would really like Alucard to be there, and Alucard's not there, but Alucard's cat Asa is. And so he goes to bed with Alucard's cat Asa on the bed beside him. On the ship that is sailing for the Inheritor and the Forbidden Market, we have a moment between Lila and Josta that puts up a tiny red flag in our mind about Josta, this captain. We're like, oh, she's a little, I'm not sure I trust her, which is a good red flag if you had that red flag while you were reading. Lila goes and finds Kel down below, and he talks about his feelings for her, and she's like, the next time I leave, you should go with me. You know? We're like, this is as close as we're gonna get. And then they have a hookup, but I'm not gonna tell you anything about it because you just gotta read those for yourself. And then we come to Holland, who is chained in the hold of the ship, and he has a confrontation with Alucard, and Alucard's like, I don't trust you. And Holland's like, nobody does, dude. Like, there's nothing you can say to me that I have not heard already. And from here, we go to Holland's third flashback. This is the third time death comes for Holland. And it actually comes in the form of somebody who will become a friend. It comes in the form of a man named Vortalis, who comes to Holland and wants his help to kill a king. And that brings us to part 8. We are going to stop there. I cannot wait to finish the rest of this journey with you. I'm so glad that you're on this ride with me. I know it's weird. I know it's dark. I know it's got many, many things going on, but we are going to, in the second half, see everything live.